Welcome back. As we head into hour two, let me give you the phone number right off the top here. Anything on your mind? 602-508-0960, 602-5080-960. If you missed my monologue in the first hour, there's a lot I packed into it. You can always get it at 960thepatriot.com, and we'll have Brandon Weikert with us in the third hour on a bunch of stuff. He's got an interesting column out, brand new column out, on Hollywood and patriotism, or at least movies and patriotism, an ongoing concern that I've started speaking about more and more lately. To regular listeners, you'll know this, is the concerns about China, and not just what they're doing, but what they're doing to us, and not just what they're doing to us, but how we are slowly accepting a lot of their philosophy, a lot of their cultural as well as political philosophy. I was just reading a piece during the break about this zero COVID policy in China and all the protests and all these examples in America of people who, while not wanting to brutalize protests, are certainly not allowing people to protest COVID mitigation policies. That was de rigueur throughout 2020 and during the shutdowns. But how many people here are saying or were saying the same things? Probably there's a few dead enders out there still. We're saying the same things that the Chinese authorities are saying, which was if everyone will comply, we can get this to zero. An impossibility. People here, smart people, actually believed that nonsense. We didn't turn hoses on, and we didn't crack down on the few people who did protest here in America the way the Chinese are cracking down on their protesters. But we did cite them. We did fine them. We did sometimes arrest them. We didn't weld their door shuts, but we certainly shamed them. It's a small step, really a small step, between what some of those tyrants in China actually do and those here in America who wish we could, wish we did. Let us never forget the elite, the cultural and, you know, brainiac elite, supposedly brainiac elite, like the Thomas Friedmans, who every few years write a column about how we should be more like China. It's getting to the point where they don't need to write that anymore. Anyway, Brandon has a piece in Law and Liberty about the Chinese and their influence with movie making, not only how many of them finance movies in America, but when they finance them, control some of the content, veto some of the content, put in some of the pro-Chinese content into our movies. But then there's this, you know, kind of this third level problem, or third problem might be first level, which is we are facing up and against a country, a nation, a culture that believes in itself in China, with one here that doesn't. You know, the downgraded and palliated view of patriotism in this country is so down market today. You just wonder what it takes for us to survive. I mean, the Chinese believe in their Maoist Marxist point of view. Americans, some, maybe 50-50, but an increasing number are taught not to and believe not to believe in America as much as we once did. We're up against a country and a culture that believes in itself with a country and a culture that doesn't, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And as Montesquieu put it, the deterioration of every country begins with the decay of the principle upon which it was founded. This is why I think some of the most important elections this past November were the school board elections, because that's where it all starts. That's where the curricula are decided. And if you have a little extra time and you think you might want to do something to help, we'll have more school board elections coming up. Get involved. It's important. This country is important. And I want us to think of its importance the same way other countries think of their import. There is not much self-doubt in place like China. We are suffused with it. That's one thing that's been on my mind. Anyway, we'll talk to Brandon a little bit about that in the next hour. Other thing that's been on my mind, I was talking with Bill Bennett this morning, and as he was getting ready to do a hit on Fox Business about these new ads that are being released in throughout San Francisco, with the signature and the underwriting of the San Francisco Department of Public Health, telling fentanyl users, telling heroin users to use safely, to use the drugs with friends, start slowly, not to stop, not the message we give with cigarettes, not the message that says we will kill you, this will kill you, sorry, not we, this will kill you, but, you know, just take it easy as you do it and make sure you do it with friends. The insanity of this, for perspective, I'll just say it again. For those that don't already realize this, fentanyl is the number one killer of young adults in this country. It's not anything else. It's not auto accidents. It's not heart. It's not COVID. Let me give you a thought to wrap your head around. Let me give you a thought to wrap your head around. Ready for it? Here it is. Three times more people under the age of 40. Three times more people under the age of 40 died from a fentanyl poisoning last year than all people under 40 throughout 3 years of COVID. Got it? 3 years of COVID didn't do to the under 40 crowd what fentanyl did in 1 year. 1 year, last year. And it's supposed to be worse this year. We don't have data yet. Wrap your head around that and ask yourself how much messaging to young people you've seen on COVID versus how much messaging you've seen to young people on dangerous and illegal drugs. You think we're misprioritized? You think we're disoriented? You bet we are. You think we're misprioritized and disoriented when we're telling people in major cities like New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco not to quit using heroin and other opioids, but to use in small doses with friends and encouraging it? You think we're not disoriented and deprioritized when we're harder on cigarettes and Juul than we are on heroin? You bet we are. You bet we are. I sometimes scratch my head wondering the Bob Dole question. Where's the outrage? But I think what we need is political leaders who are willing to step up and take this unhealthy industry on, this unhealthy industry of the public health industry. Again, I will remind, these posters and billboards in San Francisco, sponsored and signed off on by the San Francisco Department of Public Health. I don't know what more to say. Steve's in Tempe. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Seth.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah. Well, we did have somebody that was willing to fight back against the fentanyl issue, and I hate to say it, but I mean that's an alarming statistic that you just read. I had no idea that it was that.
No one does. Yeah, we know how to message when we want to. We certainly knew how to message COVID, didn't we?
Yeah, no question. But you know, President Trump fought back against this. He recognized the importance of having a secure border, and that's gone by the wayside now. And it seems like a lot of people just, you know, are willing to just let that go. And the fentanyl situation is going to increase, as you and I both know. And it's unfortunately, the other thing too, Seth, that I wanted to talk to you about is a couple of weeks ago, you had people calling in about President Trump as to, would you support him this next time around?
I was somewhat surprised,
but not overly surprised at how many people said, no, we want somebody new. And the fact is, when you look at what this man did and tried to do and had done against him in the short time that he was in office, it's unbelievable the fact that he's even still wanting to move forward and have this position as president again.
Let me do this, Steve. Let me take this commercial break real quick. I can't help it. It's what we call a hard break, and then we'll come back to you on the other side, if that's okay, if you don't mind holding. I'll ask you to indulge with some patience here. We'll be right back, and we have, of course, room for more. 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Steve in Tempe, you were talking about all that Trump has been, Donald Trump has been under. And, the calls that we were taking a couple weeks ago, my memory of them is a slight majority of callers said they wouldn't vote for Trump as their first choice in the primary. But I think almost all of them said if he were, however, the nominee, they would vote for him. But it doesn't matter. Either way, it was interesting. Yeah. It was an interesting shift.
It was. It was. And you know, I was listening to the comments, and a couple of them were – I remember one of your callers called in, and he said, yeah, one of the reasons why I'm not going to vote for Trump is because of the vaccine. He's for the vaccine. Well, you and I both know that, you know, Trump – basically broke down the barriers for these companies like Pfizer and Moderna and these other companies to basically fast track what they presented as a vaccine.
I'll remind people that Anthony Fauci throughout 2020 three times said we would not have a vaccine that year. Three times Fauci said that.
He did.
And we certainly did get one a week after the election, funny enough.
Yeah, Seth, I was just going to say that. You read my mind. It was like, isn't it interesting how Pfizer decided to hold off on saying, hey, we've got this vaccine ready to go. And it was ready to go prior to the election taking place, but they didn't want to give Trump an extra boost or be responsible for that. But that's beside the point. The fact is that, you know, when it came down to Trump would not have rolled out the vaccine and strong-armed people getting the vaccine. Can you see him actually having a directive to the military where, look, you either take this vaccine or you're done, you're out. And that's not what he's about. I honestly believe it would have been a choice situation with him. And one of the important things I wanted to tell you too, as it relates to your previous caller was talking about, you know, he had a pretty hardcore question that he asked you at the end of your discussion with him. He said, you know, do you think this is the time right now to push back in a revolutionary sense?
I took it two ways. I think you're right. There was that element, but I also think by the time the call was over, said maybe just, you know, kind of separate somehow. Yeah.
Understood. But it reminded me one of my favorite quotes from Ronald Reagan, and I'm paraphrasing it somewhat. But Ronald Reagan said, and you probably remember this. He said, "Some people will never see the light until they actually feel the heat." And we're not feeling the heat right now. I mean, we're the groundwork is being laid for some really, really damaging stuff to our economy, you know, with all the, you know, with what Biden's proposing and, you know, with the border being open, you know, wide open right now. Most of us really haven't felt that. But if this continues on in the direction that it's going right now, we are going to feel the heat from this. And it's going to be interesting to see if people have the same thoughts when that happens, I should say, if and when that happens, then right now. And my guess is when people start paying, you know, $7, $8, $9 for a gallon of gas, and things really start getting, you know, ramping up with inflation and the value, you know, of what your dollar can purchase 2 years from now isn't anywhere near what it is right now. That's when the people are. I'm just curious to see what's going to happen then, and if there's going to be that pushback that you're your previous guest was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm hoping, and I have high hopes, tempered by the notion that, you know, the Republican Party is really good at letting us down. But I am hoping that there are some serious reforms taking place. I don't know if you saw this piece of news, Steve. There is a fight, a legitimate fight. There is an election, a campaign for the chairmanship of the RNC, the Republican National Committee. Rona McDaniel, who is the current chair, is up against a couple other opponents. One of them, who became news today, is the attorney out of California named Harmeet Dhillon. Are you familiar with her?
Yep.
Yeah, really strong, strong presence. Take no prisoners approach to law and public policy. You know, if she makes them sweat, or if she becomes if she prevails in this quest, you know, that'll mean something big and different for our party and our movement. But, you know, it is also, you know, I think worth restating where we are right now in Washington, D.C. And throughout the country. It's still true that we have the majority of legislatures, and it's still true that Washington is kind of 50-50 plus Republican. If you think the Supreme Court's important, we have a supermajority there. If you think that there are three branches of power, which there are, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative, we have half the legislature, and we have a supermajority in the Supreme Court. I'd rather the Supreme Court and the House of Representatives than the Senate and the presidency any day. So, you know, we will see how tough this new class or this new majority in the House is. But, you know, I'm not willing to throw in any towels just yet, especially when the conclusion to this is such an extreme thing with no guarantee of who wins. I mean, I'm not sure that in any sense, Steve, the majority of the country believes the same things you do. Are you?
No, I don't. You know, I think you and I are on the same plane on most things, but as it relates to, you know, I think. You know,
Let's take that plane for a minute on everything we're in agreement on, which is probably 90% of stuff, I'm guessing, if not more. But let's just take that plane. Do you think the majority of the country agrees with us on that 90%?
I would, you know, Seth, that's a great question.
It's because, a great question. I don't know the answer. I don't think they do, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, what I was going to say, though, is a couple of years ago, I would have said yes.
Yeah, I would have too.
But right now,
yeah.
I would say no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's your way. Okay, so we're now at 91%. I kind of have that same view. 10 years ago I would have said yes, and I've seen it slide year by year in a more depressing direction, so to speak. That's not a position with which to give up on the electoral process.
No, I agree.
Okay, all right, Steve. God bless you. I got to take another break. You're great. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Gold has been used as money for nearly 3,000 years, and today remains a common sense investment that's simple and straightforward. You don't need a pushy commission salesperson to tell you why you should buy gold. You probably already want it. What you need is a reputable dealer with advice based on experience and a complete range of coins and bullion so you get what you want at the best value. That's the Midas Gold Group. Veteran-owned, proud supporters of this show and this station right here on 960 AM. They're fighting for your right to the financial privacy and stability that gold offers, as well as your right to speak. Trust the dealer that I and Sebastian Gorka and thousands of you already know and trust. That's the Midas Gold Group. Visit them in person at 625 West Deer Valley Road in Phoenix, or give them a call at 480-360-3000. That's 480-360-3000, or check them out online at MidasGoldGroup.com. That's MidasGoldGroup.com. David's in Gilbert. Hello, David.
Hi, Seth. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So your last caller, what he said about the heat, like another one I think of is, you know, the guy got to get punched in the face before he knows he's in a fight. It just seems like a lot of people don't realize that we're in basically a fight for our freedom. And him bringing that up is, okay, the heat comes along, but what if, my question is, do you think the Democrats are smart enough to time the heat to land to, like, maybe we win 2024, but everything collapses, and now we have the presidency, we have the Senate, we have all of this stuff, but it all collapses under the Republican. And do you think they're that smart? I don't know.
I don't know. I think we need to get smart. I'm not sure how smart we are. I'm more worried about our smarts at this point, David.
Conspiracy theory mind going with these people and all this, everything is going on.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
The conspiracy theories are coming true.
Sure.
And it's got me. I'm quite worried about all of this.
We all are. We're all very worried. Yeah. We're all extremely worried. And I think that there's civil ways to deal with it. I mean, you know, it's interesting to me that you know, we may have to recognize that we have to do better in a country where we may not be the majority anymore. We just
right.
may not be the center-right country we've convinced ourselves of for, you know, way too many years. The election in Pennsylvania is the one I can't get out of my head. I just cannot get out of my head how you can take a state like Pennsylvania and put in a man who can't complete a sentence versus, you know, a very articulate physician. Now, I understand that, you know, Mehmet Oz had some things against him and he was seen as a carpetbagger and all that. Still, you know, this is up against a man who can't complete a thought and who confuses major issues routinely. It tells me that the hatred for what Republicans were offering or what the conservative agenda is so strong, or that the support for the conservative or Republican agenda is so weak that we really have to do some thinking on our side about the kind of candidates we're running and the kind of message we want to promulgate.
Do you think that George W. Bush during the Iraq thing and all the, you know, things that took place during that time period played a part in the country despising Republicans?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I guess I haven't thought too deeply about that. It's really interesting. What I do think is that you know, George W. Bush could have done more for Republicans when he left office.
Yeah.
Now, it's true he left office very unpopular, but, yeah. you know, he became the kind of Republican, as these things tend to go, that the media fell in love with long after he was in power. And it seemed to me that if you cared about conservatism and the party that put you in power, you might have done more for Republican candidates with that media credibility. It seems
right.
to me, I don't have a lot of patience. I don't have a lot of respect, I should say, either. It's a tough thing to say about an ex-president, but I don't have a lot of patience or respect for someone who's willing to use the party when it comes to their own success, but then shut the door on using that success they earned with the party to help the party out for the next guy. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It does make sense. And I've seen him in his behavior and a lot of ex-presidents and things like they've done, they've really banded together, it seems, to just harm the Republicans.
Yeah, almost as if we have become of a sudden some kind of vulgar thing they want nothing to do with. But boy, they weren't telling us that when they were running for election and wanting our money and our votes, were they, David? Yeah, so I'm going to have to think more about his tenure in the context of your question. But right now, my respect for him is, how about helping the party that helped you so much? Thank you, brother. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you are concerned with stock market volatility, why REFI has an investment in a portfolio with a high fixed rate of return not correlated to the stock market. Your interest rate is compounded daily. You're paid monthly. There are no fees. You can turn your monthly income on or off. Compound it, whatever you choose, with no loss of principal. If you need your money back at any time. It's a portfolio where you'll know what each monthly statement will look like with no surprises. It's a secure collateralized portfolio that delivers an up to 10.25% rate of return. That's right, 10.25%. A due diligence approved firm. You can check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI34. That's 888-YREFI34. You won't get a sales pitch from them. They leave that up to me and Larry. They just like talking about what they do and letting it speak for itself. Pat is in Phoenix. Hello, Pat.
Oh, hello, Seth. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I am well. Seth, I'm calling just to say I think you're giving the average voter way too much credit. I think Pennsylvania.
Maybe.
I think Pennsylvania is a great example of that. You know, I just think the Republican brand is not what it needs to be. When people think Republican, they need to think about, the person that's out there fighting to make their lives better. We're going way too far into the weeds, and the Pennsylvania voter is a great example. We couldn't get away from the Republican brand. Pennsylvania thinks of Democrats as the people that are fighting for their well-being, and it's just not the case.
Do you think it's true beyond Pennsylvania, though? I mean, I'm hearing that last part of what you said, and I'm kind of thinking that's the general attitude about Democrats and Republicans in this country. I mean, not in South Carolina and not in Florida, I guess, but in a lot more places than I used to think was true. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're 100% right. I really think the problem is that people like you and me, we analyze the issues, we understand what's going on, and we're going to vote the way we need to vote. It's the low-information voter that really needs to be swayed, and the only way to do that is through changing your immediate perception of what a Republican is and what a Democrat is.
Right. And how do we do that? Better candidates?
I don't even think it's a best candidate thing. I think it's a marketing thing. I think it's, it would be a nationwide campaign to change the perception of what Republicans stand for. I think you need to connect us with issues of employment, issues that make your life better every day.
You know, it's so interesting, Pat, that you say that, because it seems to me that the one thing that I think was really worrisome to the Democrats going into the last month's election was were the facts about the economy. I think they were really worried about that. And so while they didn't really talk much about it, they tried to finagle a few things here and there to make the economy look less bad than it was. But they really went into this tear that a vote for a Republican is a threat to democracy. And I don't know if we came up flat-footed in a response to that or not. One of the things that I found so deeply interesting about at least the voting patterns in Arizona is that some of these school board races, obviously very down ballot, not sexy in the sense of getting headlines and a lot of discussion. Some of these school board candidates we were backing, and I presume you and I probably likely would have both supported if we lived in those school districts, they got 13% more voter turnout than the top of the ticket races, like for Senate and governor, talking about not only education freedom, but more importantly, education curriculum.
Right. So those are issues that bring parents.
Yes.
Out. Those are issues that bring, those are things that everyday people are interested in.
And it worked in Virginia, right? I mean, I think Glenn Youngkin understood that in Virginia. And you know where else I think we have to admit it? Not that this is a big concession. You know where else I think we need to point out where it worked in a big way? Florida. I mean, Ron DeSantis rode that anti-woke wave a lot.
He's fantastic. And look at the way he presents himself.
Yeah.
You know, he stands for all the same issues we do.
Yep.
He does it in a way that can't be attacked, can't be mocked, and in a common sense way, using logic and reason. And, the biggest problem I see nationwide is we don't have great Republican leadership.
There you go. That's what I mean when I say better candidates, too. Yeah, leadership and candidates. Leadership and candidates, yeah.
They need to let all the Republicans know these are the issues, and this is where we stand. That's what the Democrats do. Great. They're all on message. We are not.
Oh, they are so on message. I mean, it is amazing when you look how on message they were with saying the same thing about the Elon Musk, Matt Taibbi reveals over the weekend. They were all saying the same thing. Look how much they say the same thing when you tune on from CNN to MSNBC. Nancy Pelosi saying the exact same thing. Hakeem Jeffries is saying on another network, which is the exact same thing Hillary Clinton is saying on CBS. Yeah, they don't have a cat herding problem, and we do.
Yeah.
But we go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And we have Mitch McConnell. I mean,
well, that's the other thing. Even those that are maybe perhaps, you know, trying to give us the message, they aren't the kind of people that you really want to storm a hill for.
Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, when you watch, I live here in Phoenix, and when you watch this last election, you know, I know many people that have said to me, you know, what's the point in voting if I don't even have 100% confidence that I'm voting in an election that I can really stand behind? You know, so we've got a lot of issues. We've got voter integrity. We've got messaging. We've got leadership. You know, we need somebody in charge that we can count on.
What will it take for us to realize all of the above, Pat? I mean, it seems so obvious to me what you're saying and what I'm thinking too, or trying to say, maybe not as well as you are. It just is so obvious to me that I do not understand the disconnect from those that, you know, theoretically want to win and sit in Washington and or in, you know, various state Republican Party headquarters of their state leadership and just refuse to recruit great candidates. I know they exist.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I know tons of people who'd be great candidates that just,
for
you know,
sure,
they're never touched, they're never thought of, and they probably don't think of running themselves. They should be.
And you know what is even more frustrating is when you look back and you say, you know, or you always look forward and say, I wish we could control all three branches of government. Or, you know, presidency and the two executives. But we had that with Trump.
Yep.
We had the Senate,
but
we didn't act.
Yep.
I mean, we had the opportunity and we didn't act. So very discouraging, but
we're on the same page. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. It's worth ventilating on and worth cogitating on. Thank you, Pat, very much. Very much. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I can't get this out of my head, the story. Incoming House Democratic Whip Catherine Clark of Massachusetts, means she's the number two in the Democrats, the House of Representatives, coming in January. She said she recalled one of her children waking up with nightmares due to concerns about climate change. Clark made the comment when asked by NBC News anchor Chuck Todd what she and incoming House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries intended to do differently than their predecessors Pelosi and Hoyer. The 59-year-old Clark argued that her generation could bring a fresh perspective to Congress because her kids grew up being tormented by the threats of climate change. One of the biggest changes, she said, quote, one of the biggest changes is going to be that we're coming into this in the minority. But the commitment that we have had to the people of this country, to workers, to women, to the climate is going to continue on. And let me tell you what it means to me coming in as a different generation. I remember my middle child waking up with nightmares over concern around climate change. I had my family at a movie theater. When the movie stopped, my children immediately felt there must be a shooter in the theater with us. You know, there is only really one way this happens with children. It's because adults fed them this. Children don't come up with the problems of climate change as being nightmarish, end of the world, Thunderdome, without adults giving that thought to them or nurturing it or encouraging it. Blue Shield of California did a nationwide survey 5 months ago. 75% of Gen Z youth have experienced a mental health-related issue, such as anxiety, stress, and/or feelings of being overwhelmed as a result of reading, seeing, or hearing news about climate change. 75% have had anxiety, stress, and/or feelings of being overwhelmed as a result of hearing news, seeing, or reading news about climate change. We're catastrophizing our children all over again. You can create this loop. You can create mental health problems in this country. Here's a headline I hate from the Washington Post today. The crisis of student mental health is much vaster than we realize. Why don't you look at what the progressives did to kids over the last 3 years and ask me if this is all one big mystery? How do we get here? Brandon Weikert coming up. Don't go away. We'll be right back.